even when someone's dominating, there are still guys that are close that are able to catch up. If your level drops a little, their level raises. And that's what happened with Andy Murray. Andy Murray is someone that works extremely hard, has been committed to getting to number one in the world and winning Grand Slams. And all it took was a little bit of a decline in Novak. It wasn't like he went from number one to number 10 so quickly. He's still, I think those two guys are still pretty far and above the rest of the tour right now.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. Happy New Year, everyone. It is our first podcast of 2017. Thanks for all your listenership and support. Last year, we're going to keep doing these, and we may have a fun partnership agreement to announce in a few weeks, but for now, we'll keep that under wraps. We do, though, have a terrific guest. James Blake is going to kick us off. Apart from just turning 37, James will be coming to New York for the QQQ PowerShares event at the Barclays Center Saturday night. That's January 7th. He'll be playing with John McEnroe, Andy Roddick, and Jim Courier. James is, apart from being a former top five player, he's a Tennis Channel commentator, all-around good guy. I had asked for questions via Twitter. You had great questions to throw at James, and then we had some timing issues, and we actually did this interview before the questions came, so we'll do those next time we get James on. Meanwhile, we talk about the 2017 season, Federer, Nadal. We talk about some coaching changes, free-form conversation as always. But for now, let's bring him in from 3 hours earlier in the day on the West Coast. James Blake, I was thinking, you're our first podcast of 2017, so thanks for that. It's an honor.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to be honored.
So let's talk tennis. I got a bunch of questions for you from readers. Most of them have to do with you're sharing a name with a dubstep singer. I suspect that's changed. I suppose that's complicated your life, hasn't it?
Yeah, it happens a lot now. I'll give my credit card or something like, oh my goodness, did you sing this song or did you? And I don't really know the guy at all. I don't know any of his music, so I'm a little clueless, but I just have to keep telling them, no, sorry, that's not me.
Not only a former top five player, but a collaborator with Calvin Harris as well.
I feel kind of bad. I realize that I look nothing alike, but people that are big fans, at least if they see me, they realize that we're not the same person.
he probably gets it too. So anyway, I'm thinking big theme as we are mere days away from the first major of the year. Return of Roger and Rafa, who both, of course, took time off at the end of 2016. How do you see each of those going?
Well, I'm excited, just like any other fan, to see what happens, because, you know, those two guys that, you know, they were in their prime around the time I was in my prime, so I competed against them a ton of times, and it was a lot of fun, and, you know, I took plenty of losses, but it was fun to compete against two of the best of all time, and, you know, I think at this age, good for them to take time off and let their bodies really heal, and hopefully they've gotten to that stage where they feel 100% ready to go. And I'm interested to see how they come back. Rafa obviously a lot younger, but he's seemingly put so many more miles on his body, and you know he plays such a physical style that everyone expected him to retire younger because of how hard he worked for every single point. But it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Roger at 35, it's amazing. He's still going to be out there playing and see if he's at that same level. And I hope he is. I mean, those are two of the nicest guys. They've really set the bar so high for every other athlete and tennis player as being great champions and great role models and humanitarians. It's going to be tough to see them go when their time really does come to an end on tour.
I always said it's not just that they set the bar high, but they've made it so hard for everybody else. If the guy who if two guys who've won 30 plus majors between them are still decent, when you're ranked number 23, it's a little conspicuous when you're an asshole. I don't know, can we swear on these things? All right, Jamie says we can swear. Great, we can swear, James Blake. So now you can you can really be yourself. Go back to what you were saying before. Who do you think? You know, we obviously know that Roger is, you know, 4 years older, but if they both had odometers on them, who do you think has more miles? Who do you think has tracked more miles?
That would be an interesting study, and I would probably say Rafa, just because of how hard it seems like he has to work for so many of his points. And he doesn't get a lot of free points on his serve. He started to a little bit more later in his career, but playing so much on clay, you set up those points. You play longer ones. He plays defense so well. Roger, even though it seems like it's easy, it looks easy by what he's doing. It's obviously not easy, but he gets a lot more free points. He was moving forward a lot more, especially early in his career. And also, he doesn't play as much doubles. Rafa plays a ton of doubles as well. And along with playing doubles, he does well in a lot of doubles tournaments. So it just puts more and more sort of strain on his knees, on his back, on his shoulder.
And what about that's our gold medal winner at the most recent Olympics. But wouldn't you add practice also?
Yeah, and Rafa has been known to practice, to put in those 4, 5, 6 hour days. And I think almost all players at that top level put in those kind of days when they're younger. And as you get older, you start kind of waning, and you start what you maybe call practicing smarter and knowing your body and knowing how much you can sort of take. And it seems like he doesn't want to ever dial it back, from what I've heard. I haven't been on tour for the last 3 years, so maybe he has dialed it back. But it seemed like even when I was still on tour, he was putting in hours and hours and hours on the practice court too.
What's the deal with the player who is ranked number two? And if I had told you 6 months ago that Djokovic would be ranked number two, you would wonder what happened. What did happen?
He got seriously injured, because that seemed like the only way it was possible about 6 months ago.
That's a good point. Yeah, if physical injury is not not the cause of you hate to say decline. You don't want to over dramatize it. But the guy won a Masters Series event and got to the final of the U.S. Open, but he's not the Novak Djokovic that he was if we'd had this conversation a year ago. What's your sense on that?
Yeah, and like you said, you don't want to over-dramatize it, because I actually don't think it's much of a decline. It's a drop in his level by less than 5%, I would say, but it's just that Andy Murray has raised his level, and that shows you that even when someone's dominating, there are still guys that are close that are able to catch up. If your level just a little, their level raises. And that's what happened with Andy Murray. Andy Murray is someone that worked extremely hard and has been committed to getting to number one in the world and winning Grand Slams. And, I'm really happy for him to have achieved it. And all it took was a little bit of a decline in Novak. It wasn't like he went from, from number one to number 10 so quickly. He's still... I think those two guys are still pretty far and above the rest of the tour right now.
Right.
And we'll see. It remains to be seen how Rafa and Roger come back, and if Juan Martín Del Potro is healthy for the whole year and is able to compete with them. But it seems like those guys are still at the at the top level, and it's not like Novak dropped that much. So I don't count him out of winning any of the slams this year.
Our producer Jamie can fix it in the post production. It's Sir Andy Murray. From now on.
Sorry.
What's the we traffic in cliche occasionally in this media arena. Something you hear with Djokovic, he's lost his aura in the locker room. Do you buy that? Does that exist? Do other players genuinely think that this is a vulnerable, or this is a dented guy? I mean, does that make sense intuitively? But does that actually exist? That concept?
Yeah, I think a lot of guys in the locker room kind of grasp for that. You want to step out onto the court every time you play someone and think you have a chance to win. And I played Roger, I think 9 or 10 times, and every time I played him, I wanted to think I had a chance to win. And so if you could pick on one thing, like, oh, he, someone just took him to a tiebreaker in the last match, and I've beaten that guy, so I'll be all right. Or I'm playing much better than I played last time I played him. I can do this. And I think you get that aura back, and then just beating guys. He's gonna go out, and he's still gonna. Those guys are all gonna think they have a chance, but it's not gonna change that his level is still so high, and his defense is so impenetrable that he's gonna be able to wear guys down.
So if Djokovic wins the Australian Open yet again, I mean his run really since 2008 in Australia has just been a joke. If he wins in 2017, how many more majors is he winning this year? I'm going to ask you the opposite question.
If he wins Australia, I think he'll win one more after that too.
And if he doesn't, which means he will have gone, three straight majors without a title. But I think not defending in Australia, where he's played so well over the last decade. If he doesn't win in Australia, how many majors is he winning?
I think I'm going to stick with one. I'm going to say outside of Australia, he's going to win one out of the last three.
Majors won by players outside the Big Four plus Wawrinka. You think anyone gets on the board this year?
I'm going to give a chance to Del Potro and a slight chance to Raonic at Wimbledon.
Came
otherwise.
Not bad. Yeah. Who's the top American at this time next year?
At this time next year, I'm going to go with Jack Sock. I think he's got he's on the rise. He's playing really well. He had an unbelievable end to the year, but how well he's playing in singles and doubles. I haven't talked to him or heard how he did in the offseason. I talked to Troy Hahn a little bit and said he's been working really hard. So I think that's the right – he just continued to go with taking small steps in the right direction. So I think the big thing for him is managing his schedule. He played so many matches at the end of last year with singles and doubles. I think he needs to start realizing that he has the ability to be a great singles player and maybe – curtailing a little bit of the doubles because he played so well in doubles too.
We talked to him a few weeks ago, and I think just getting to the point where he could go through a year healthy and finish strong is an achievement. But I think you're right. It's hard for these guys to play, 60, 70 plus matches in singles and then also spend that time on the court with doubles.
He does it okay sometimes of using that as practice, but I still think it drains you mentally too because you're so focused when you're on the doubles court too.
That's what someone said. They said, on the one hand, court time is court time, but he said, in practice, it's mentally it's so different than when there's umpires and ball kids and a scoreboard and fans. And on the one hand, you spend an hour, but it's a much different exercise. Did you find that too?
Yeah, it's very different. And, you can practice for 2, 3, 4 hours and come off the court and not feel that tired. But if you play a match, even if you play a match at 6-2, 6-2, you're done in an hour and 15 minutes, you feel it because you were focused on every single point. To win 6-2, 6-2 sounds easy, but it's not easy when you have to put that much mental energy into it. And so on the doubles court, you feel the same, especially with Jack. He's a good guy that is generally friends with a lot of his partners. So he really does want to win for them too, I think.
Let's go back to Djokovic for a second, because this is going to be the first week of tennis for him, and certainly the first major post Boris. And I think to most of us that haven't played, to most fans, I think there's still some mystery to the player coach relationship. How much does it even matter at this stage? 30 year old guy, a dozen slams.
Yeah, it's starting to matter less and less. And I remember when I got to that stage in my career that you've heard a lot of the same things. You've been on tour for so long that I don't want to say it's on autopilot, but a lot of the right things you're supposed to be doing. And if you're doing something wrong, you are. And it helps to have someone that you feel very comfortable with. I think he's had Marijan Vida there with him for so long. That is, and I give a ton of credit to Marijan for how well he's done with Novak and sticking with him, through Boris, through Todd Martin, through all the other, coaches and super coaches and people that have been on the team, the trainers, the nutritionists. Marijan Vida has been a constant, and he's been so helpful and I think a calming influence on Novak all the time. So for Novak at this stage, I don't think it matters as much for a coach. I think it's about staying healthy and about him knowing all the things he's learned over the past 12 years or so he's been on tour.
Remember, Federer had about a 3-year window where he basically didn't have a coach. Granted, mm-hmm. his fiance was a top 100 player. I mean, granted, he surrounded himself with people that knew tennis. But are you surprised that instead of going to these staffs and, as you say, these super coaches, and remember, Raonic had 3 coaches last summer. are you surprised that people haven't gone independent and just said, it's a lot of clutter. No one's teaching me to re-hit my backhand at age 30. I'm just going to go this alone.
Yeah, I think it's tough to go alone just because it's kind of lonely out there if you don't have someone else on your team. And I know you can have a nutritionist or a trainer or someone like that, but it helps to have someone else just that you can bounce tennis ideas off once in a while at least. With Roger, like you said, it may have been a little unique with Mirka was an excellent player in her own right, so he could talk to her about tennis and she could understand. And So I'm not surprised that people haven't kind of gone independent or gone alone out there. It's good to have someone in your corner always.
You have a nice relationship with Serena Williams, do you not?
Yeah.
Are you getting the wedding invite, James Blake?
I don't know. I don't think I'll make that cut. I'm not sure. We had a Hopman Cup final together. We had a lot of fun. We've definitely had some fun times while we were on tour together. But I'm guessing that there's a lot of people that are clamoring for that invitation, and I don't know if I'll make the cut. I hope I do. I know one thing: it will be a fun wedding. She definitely has a good time at the celebration. So. I hope I do. So if Serena's listening, I'll be sure to email along or forward my address if you're looking for it.
You don't even mind a back table. Is that what you're saying?
I don't mind a back table. I think the back tables and the front tables will be a lot of fun at that wedding.
What do you expect? Big weddings aside, fun weddings aside, what do you expect out of her in 2017?
I expect, I've said it to a lot of people that she's, male or female, she's one of the greatest competitors I've ever been around in my life. So I expect her to continue that and still be a competitor. I know at some point, it's only natural, at some point her body is going to start showing signs of wear and tear and of fatigue and, just that many years out on tour. But until we see that, her mind is going to be as strong as anyone else out on tour. So, I'm excited to see how she can do it. She can get past Steffi, the tie with Steffi for the Grand Slam titles, and if she can reclaim number one, that would just be an incredible accomplishment at her age. I don't know if she's focused on that because of her age, that she probably needs to limit her schedule to play her best at the big events. But I'm excited to see it, and I know she's going to be mentally, she's going to be all there and ready for every single Grand Slam this year.
Keep going with that. What do you mean? Because I think I've heard you say this on air, and I think it makes a lot of sense. But what do you mean when you say she's one of the great competitors you've ever seen? I mean, is that just at 4-all in the third set, there's no one I'd rather have my life on winning the match? What do you mean by that?
For her, to me, it goes down to practice and everything like that. Everyone has heard stories, the legends of Michael Jordan, being up late and late and late to play checkers because he hadn't won a game. He wants to play until he wins. He wants to play pool until he's better than the person he's playing and find a way to win. To me, you can apply every one of those to Serena. I remember, often the men and the women don't practice together, but I remember we happened to be, I think it was we were at the ESPYs in LA and there was no one else in town. And we were both going, so we went and hit. And I was just practicing with her. And, in general, obviously just physically, men are a little stronger, a little faster sometimes. And she was not listening to that. She wanted to do every single thing I did, every single drill I did. She wanted to compete every single way possible with me. And I was just so impressed that she was not going to quit. I was like, okay, you take this one off, I'll do this one. No, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then I've seen her in matches, obviously, and there's never a fear in her, like you said, an aura in the locker room. It doesn't matter who she's playing. She knows she can win and she feels like she's going to. I remember when we did play Hopman Cup together, I was playing Leighton Hewitt, and he was number one in the world at the time. And my coach is with me. My coach is very sort of reserved, and we talked about the strategy. We talked about that. And then she just came into my little, dressing room, and she's like, basically, you're gonna kick his you-know-what, and you're going to go out there and do this. And she didn't care that he's number one in the world. She just knows that, she's on my team, and she wants me to win. And I ended up winning that match, and she, just basically told me, I told you you were going to do this, and every single mixed doubles match we played, she had that same attitude that we're going to kick the crap out of these guys, and she didn't have any fear of going, forehand to forehand with any of the guys or ripping it at them. She had just zero fear, and it's just, like I said, male or female, that's an attitude that I love to have and love to see in a competitor.
All right, let me ask you two questions off of that. One of them, without going on to this third rail, if you're hitting against her and, there's a sheet on the other side, you don't know the identity of the opponent, but that ball's coming off a racket and you're having that hitting session, who do you think you're playing against? I mean, is this a great college player? Is this a doubles player? I mean, if you don't know it's Serena Williams, just based on the ball you're being fed, what are you thinking?
if you take out the movement, which is so if it's just hitting, you know, just hitting cross courts or whatever,
right?
You could say that that's a, you know, that's pretty much a tour level guy. But it, then when you bring in the movement, it changes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it's kind of a silly discussion, but I think people are still interested in. I mean, the two things I've heard when you make this comparison are A, the movement, and B, the action on the serve. So not necessarily the miles per hour, but what the ball's doing. But
yeah, the serve is really the big thing. Why people ask me, I still get that question. Could you beat Serena Williams? And it's always relatively amusing. People are amazed if I say yes. I think I could.
But wait, she's won more than 20 majors, and you never won. But no, I mean, I think, you know, honestly, I think that you. I mean, one of the great things about tennis is you've got these two simultaneous events, and you have men and women playing together, and most fans are fans of men and women. I don't think it's unreasonable for people to wonder how one gender would do against the other. Shouldn't impact how we feel about equal prize money or anything like that. But I just think it's something that's normal for fans to wonder about. But you're saying you're just hitting forehands. You're just hitting forehands, and you don't know the identity. That's a tour level. Those are tour level ground strokes.
Yeah, she hits the ball. She hits the ball as well as some of the guys out there. It's just when you add in the serve and the movement, it changes. And I just want to go off on a tangent and agree on you that it shouldn't take anything away from the equal prize money or anything like that, because, like you said, people come to watch tennis, and they see men's tennis, they see women's tennis, and they both help each other to promote the sport. And so people are coming to watch the sport. And so, you know, the equal prize money fight that Venus Williams has carried on from the legacy of Billie Jean King is something that, I'm proud to have them, both of them, as friends and people that are, fighting for equality. And I'm, happy that they're doing that.
You really want that wedding invitation, James Blake.
Let me ask you. Whenever Venus gets
there. Yeah, exactly. as long as you're going here, let me ask you a question. I was just going to write about this, but let me bounce this off of you. That we live in polarizing times, right? I mean, we've never been more divided on so many issues. It strikes me that one thing that's interesting about tennis right now is that it may lack in rivalries in a McEnroe Connors, even a Williams Hingis kind of way. But it seems perfectly reasonable to like Murray and Djokovic, for instance. I think the same thing with Roger and Rafa. I mean, I don't think, you can't say I like the Yankees and I like the Red Sox. You kind of have to pick. No one likes Duke and Carolina, but it seems pretty normal to me to say I like Djokovic and Murray. Is that something that tennis can trade on? I mean, do you think there's any sort of equity there?
I think sort of like what I was saying is they're fans of the sport.
Right.
So I think a lot of fans of the sport are big fans of just seeing great tennis. So they see matchups, they see, you're not going to see Borg McEnroe anymore, where you've got a guy that's coming in on everything as opposed to a baseliner, because the styles aren't as contrasting, but you can still have contrasting personalities. And I've noticed, in my little tennis channel role, and if I say something good about Roger, I get a lot of people responding to me about Rafa's better.
You're so biased.
About Rafa,
yeah, right.
I get a lot of people responding.
Exactly.
So there's still, I think the fans have more of a rivalry than the players. Because the players obviously want to win, but the fans get pretty adamant about sticking to their guy. And I think it's interesting, and I do think there's a lot of people that can be just fans of the sport, and that's kind of what I am now, too.
But I wonder if tennis can do anything with this. I mean, I wonder if they can't actively sort of market the fact that you don't have to pick a side and there aren't these heated rivalries. I wonder if there's any any sort of way to monetize that, or if there's any equity there, or if that's just we should hope we have rivalries because that's ultimately what drives interest.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, because I think for so long tennis has tried to create rivalries, and they've tried to create, the next generation against the old guard, and Agassi versus Sampras and things like that. And, you create those rivalries, and that makes people so interested in their differences. But, I wonder if they could go a completely different way. That's a good – I'll be interested to read your article. Maybe tennis executive to think outside the box.
That is a stretch. You are coming to you're coming to this Cowtown this weekend.
Yes, I am.
You want to you want me to do the plug, or you want to do it? I'll do it. I'll do it
for the Power Series QQQ Cup.
Exactly.
In Brooklyn at Barclays. I'm excited to be playing in Barclays Center. I've been to a Jay-Z concert there, and now I'll be sort of on stage. So it'll be a lot of fun playing against Andy Roddick, and Don McEnroe and Jim Curry are going to be there. So I'm excited to be a part of it. We have a lot of these throughout the year, throughout the country. But for me, this will feel like a home match, and I think it's going to be great for the crowd. You got Jim Curry, who lives in New York. You got Andy Roddick, who's won the U.S. Open, and Don McEnroe, who's a native New Yorker. So hopefully the crowd will be pretty energetic for us.
And Connecticut's own James Blake, Mets fan,
yeah,
tri-state area resident. McEnroe doesn't really care if he wins these things or not, right? That's just a myth.
Oh, man. Speaking of competitors, he's still as competitive as ever and loves playing and really is getting angry if he's not playing his best, if he's not playing well. He's just, we all have been in locker rooms that are a little uncomfortable because someone just lost and they're upset and you want to stay away. And
Just to be clear, you're talking about power shares locker rooms. You're not talking about locker rooms from...
Exactly. Well, we've all been in the locker rooms on the ATP tour where that happens and you just want to stay away. But now on power shares locker rooms, it's still the same way. When Dom comes in and he didn't play well, he's genuinely upset.
Yeah, so someone said they went to watch one of these and McEnroe was playing to the crowd and got upset. And maybe it was in his contract to throw a fit the way he did in 1984. And someone had to say, no. That's still how he rolls.
He might play the first time, all that joke with the umpire, but then when it gets serious, he gets serious.
When people go to these events, what level of tennis should they expect to see?
Well, it's still a pretty good level, thanks to the fact that the format makes it so that we only have to play one set at a time. So we can keep it up and still play some pretty good tennis. And it's maybe not quite as consistent. We'll play some great points. But the every single shot as focused as we used to be, it might not be. But the top level when we're playing some really good points, it's still pretty good. I mean, I can still go out there and hit. Andy, I know, can as well. We can hit with some of the guys on tour, and we can still put on a good put on a pretty good performance. We're just not going to do it day in and day out.
Tennis, the sport of a lifetime. You and I both have to go, but I want to share some bad news with you.
Uh-oh.
I hear a vicious rumor you and I are going to be pitted together at Indian Wells on Tennis Channel set again.
I can't wait. That's probably my most fun tournament of the year.
It's a good time, right?
The morning recaps and previews with John Wertheim sitting at breakfast there in the lounge and getting caught up on everything tennis related.
I still have scars from where we're kicking each other under the table. this event, Saturday night, January 7th at Barclays Center, as you said so eloquently, this is the QQQ Cup. McEnroe, Roddick, Courier, Blake, and I will also say, and you mentioned this, Barclays Center, great, great venue. Just world-class venue. Terrific place to watch a sporting event. All right, this was fun. We're going to rope you into another one of these soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, John.
Good luck Saturday. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
See you, James. All right, that's this week's SI Tennis Podcast. Guest was James Blake. He was terrific. We're going to have him back, and again, we will pepper him with the questions that you guys sent via Twitter about his NYPD relationship, about athletes and tennis players taking politically active stances, about social justice, about Serena Williams, all sorts of good questions. We'll get to it next time with James, and you heard him. He's happy to do these whenever we like. That does it for this week. We'll have another guest next week. Then we're off to Australia. So next week we'll preview the Australian Open. I don't think the draw will be out yet, but we'll talk some Australian Open tennis. We'll try to do a few of these in Melbourne, and then we're back at it. Again, I'm John Wertheim. Guest was James Blake. Our producer, as always, is the talented Jamie Lasanti. Thanks for listening. Keep the suggestions coming. We'll do it again in 7 days.